As we continue to unpack the 8-plus hours of questions and testimony from the legislative hearing on the mental health portion of the governor's proposed budget, we're going to check in with the man who popped up in the 7th hour. That's Glenn Liebman, CEO of the Mental Health Association in New York State. Welcome back to the show, Glenn.
Glad to be here. Thanks, David.
I want to start with a dollar and cents issue that you care about that was not in the governor's proposal, a 1% raise for workers in residential settings operated by your members. What type of workers would this have benefited if it was included? And did you have reason to believe this pay bump would be in Cuomo's proposed spending plan?
Well, we were certainly hopeful it would be. So it's a 1%, which is about $15 million in the Office of Mental Health, that represents, we don't have direct care workers per se in mental health for the most part. That's more in the DD field. But the closest we have to direct care workers are people who work in residential settings. So that's a lot of the people who are making minimum wage or just above minimum wage. We have, you know, some of the people who are would be getting this 1% increase are some of the social workers who work in the field, peers who also are dramatically underpaid, who are very engaged with, you know, community services for people with mental health issues, family members who are engaged. So this cut is, you know, well, this is, you know, they're delaying it till next year, moving it to next year. It's something that we look at and we say this is really hurtful in the sense that a lot of these people who I just referenced were the heroes of the pandemic from a mental health perspective. These are the folks who had to go to work every day, who had to be in the office every day, making, you know, $12-$13 an hour, dealing directly with individuals. So the fact that even a 1%, which is not a lot of money to an individual, the fact that it's, you know, being delayed till next year is really something that we're very mindful of and you know, frustrated about. And, you know, we get the budget deficit. We understand it. Nobody, you know, we're all very familiar with the budget deficit in New York State. But I think something like this is just such a small amount of money relative to really enhance the work of those who have been our heroes during the pandemic. So I was disappointed by that. Well, I didn't have a heads up on that or anything like that. But I was disappointed to see that is delayed till next year.
Is this sort of delay a recurring issue when it comes to funding for pay increases for the mental health sector and really all the industries that provide, you know, hands-on or direct care to some of the most vulnerable New Yorkers?
You know, David, this has been absolutely something, something we have really fought for. We were part of the 345 campaign last year, which was for the entire human service sector to get a 3% increase in funding over the next 5 years. So as you can imagine, this was pre-pandemic. So after the pandemic hit, it really became even more significant of an issue because, you know, the entire human service sector, these are the people that we keep lauding for their great work. And they are, they've done fantastic work throughout the pandemic. And they're the ones going in when everybody else is coming out. And I think that they are the ones who are most deserving of a cost of living increase. And again, unfortunately, this one was deferred and we've been unable to get the 345. And hopefully, if we're fully funded in this, you know, that we get the $15 billion from Washington, that hopefully what we'll see is us moving forward around the recognition of this nonprofit sector and getting appropriate funding for those direct care workers.
You're co-chair of a trauma-informed advisory task force for the essential workforce, which was created last year by the legislature and governor in recognition of the mental toll the pandemic is likely taking on this population. What's been going on with this group as far as meetings and you know, coming up with an action plan?
Well, we have had to this point about 3 or 4 meetings with the group, and it's, you know, the timeline for this group is very important, and this is really something we really wanted to highlight. At least the draft plan, some of the early implementation pieces, are due by March 1st. And this is something we fought for in the language of the bill because we wanted to at least have a window of at least a month where we could go to the legislature, go to the executive, go to DOB to say, look, we have brought together all the major stakeholders around the issue of the essential workforce and trauma-informed care. This is a huge issue during the pandemic, and we have concise, specific recommendations that we hope to be able to attach some funding to so we can go and advocate for that. What that will be at this point, we don't know. We're still having those discussions, but we are talking about things like, you know, whether we're talking about things like a demonstration project, public awareness campaigns, more work around sort of identifying what the best practices are in the field of trauma-informed care. And I think that's what we're really trying to do, is get a snapshot of really what is of most significance to hospital workers, to the mental health field, to people in, you know, the OASIS world, to people who are across the board, who are the direct care workers who have been most impacted. What do they need? And this is why this, I think, has been a very effective group so far in terms of our conversations, by bringing in all those different sectors to have those conversations.
In the handful of meetings you've had so far, I mean, are any obvious recommendations emerging so far?
Well, I think, you know, I don't, you know, we're still discussing. So I have my own personal bias in terms of where I think we should be looking. I think that we have to do greater public awareness. When you talk about trauma-informed care, it's something that people nod their heads and say, yes, that we absolutely need to do that. But a lot of people don't even know what trauma-informed care is. So even the most basic of essential pieces around sort of some sort of PSAs or some sort of, you know, some sort of marketing around this specifically is something certainly I would be advocating for. And I think there, you know, there are other things as well. We have to have stronger assessments in the different fields to sort of understand people who are facing trauma and how we collectively can respond to their trauma needs. And that's what trauma-informed care does.
We're talking about mental health issues, and our guest is Glenn Liebman, CEO of the Mental Health Association in New York State. Tucked in the governor's budget is a provision that would call for the consolidation of the state's Office of Mental Health and the Office of Addiction and Support Services, creating the Office of Addiction and Mental Health Services. According to a memorandum from the governor's budget office, the merger would let the state better serve the needs of New Yorkers. What's your reaction to the proposal?
Well, by and large, we've been, as most of the statewide organizations have been, we've been generally supportive. I think that there's a growing recognition, the science is telling us, of the needs of those who have both a mental health and substance use disorder. It's much more common than we, you know, would think 15, 20 years ago. And I think there is more of an ability for both of the agencies working together to sort of create some innovative proposals, some innovative ideas. The important thing being that we have to make sure that there are people who have a mental health issue who don't have a substance use issue, and vice versa. And we have to make sure that the services continue for those individuals, much like they've done in the past. So hopefully it'll be okay. But this is my biggest issue, Dave, for this, is the funding of it. Okay, so when agencies traditionally merge over the years, or, you know, whatever, creating a new agency, however you want to frame it, there are going to be savings from this. People aren't doing it, you know, just, yes, it's the right thing to do, and we're appreciative of that, but there have to be savings there. There've got to be savings. And so far, we've not gotten anything from the state in terms of actual savings. We've heard that there are actually not going to be any savings, or certainly not any savings this year. But we don't know, and we really need sort of a real transparent process to find out how much the savings will be, because we assume there will be savings, because that's one of the reasons you're doing this. And we need transparency around that. And what we really need is to say, okay, if there are savings, and you're saying there are no savings, but so then if there are savings, then put language in the bill that specifically says that that money has to go back into the community for behavioral health services. That's the most important piece. Already we are an incredibly underfunded system, both mental health and OASIS is incredibly underfunded. To sit there and to say, okay, we're going to create this new agency, which, you know, fine, we support that, but we want to make sure that all that money stays in our system. That's the most important thing from our perspective. And I know you had Assemblymember Gunther the other day talking about reinvestment, and it's very similar. You know, if beds will close, we want to make sure that those beds stay in our system, and that money does not go back into the state's general fund. A very similar concept.
And finally, the budget includes language that would lower the threshold for involuntarily committing someone, changing the standard from a, quote, danger to self or others to, quote, likelihood to result in serious harm. What's actually involved with involuntary commitment, and what do you think of this proposed change?
So, you know, the traditional standard in New York City has been danger to self or others. What the state is saying is that there has to be a different interpretation of that, because there are people who don't traditionally raise to the level of danger to self or others who are clearly in need of support and services. So from that, their perspective as to why they're doing it, and obviously I'm truncating what they're saying, and you know, you should talk to them to get their perspective. But from our perspective, I think that we're sort of, you know, understand that, but I think we're missing the target a little bit, and we should be focusing on the services that should be available to people who are in crisis. And I know we're talking about crisis stabilization centers, more funding for crisis services, and I think that's where we should be. But rather than this language change, I would much rather see much more of a focus around educating law enforcement about mental health and, you know, putting more funding into crisis stabilization services, as this budget does, but to really make sure that we have a perspective that is holistic around an individual, and not saying, okay, this person appears that they may be a danger, let's bring them to the emergency room. I'd much rather see a much broader discussion about services. I think the service structure is really the answer, much more than specific language.
Well, it sounds like, based on what you're saying, that there wasn't exactly clamoring from the mental health community for this language change. Is that fair to say?
That's probably fair to say for the most part. Again, you know, I understand, and I said this in my testimony, I completely, you know, I get it. I understand why there's this movement, but I think there are different ways to go at it than the language that was put forth.
Well, we've been speaking with Glenn Liebman, CEO of the Mental Health Association in New York State. Glenn, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
It's good talking to you as always, David.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.